is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, residents in the Catskills, including those in the New York City watershed, encounter variable drinking water conditions via private wells or municipal systems. This Friday, the Catskill Water Discovery Center presents a program on challenges and solutions for groundwater in the Catskills. We'll get a problem of the problems Catskills municipalities, residents, farmers, and other users of groundwater encounter. Pride Month. Catskills Pride has two big events scheduled to celebrate Pride, including their awards gala, recognizing individuals in Sullivan County who exemplify their mission statement. It's Monday. Work Shift Live. We'll check in with local economist James B. Huntington. And today is World Bicycle Day. We'll speak to John Thorndike of CycleWorks in Jeffersonville about the benefits of cycling and bike safety. First, the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. President Biden's son, Hunter, has arrived at a federal courthouse in Delaware. First Lady Jill Biden is there, too. Jury selection starts today for Hunter Biden's trial on federal firearm charges. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports he's accused of lying about his illegal drug use when he bought a gun 6 years ago.
The case centers around a Colt revolver Hunter Biden purchased in October of 2018. Prosecutors say Biden lied about his illegal drug use on a background check form he filled out when buying the gun. He faces two counts of making false statements and one count of illegal possession of a firearm by a drug user or addict. The case was brought by Justice Department Special Counsel David Weiss. The trial in Delaware comes less than a year after a tentative deal with prosecutors that would have allowed Biden to avoid trial entirely fell apart. Weiss also has separately brought tax charges against the president's son in a case in California. That's scheduled for trial in September. But first, there's a gun case in Delaware, which is expected to last up to 2 weeks. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
A Republican-led House panel is going to question Dr. Anthony Fauci this hour. Some lawmakers are expected to grill him on his handling of the federal government's pandemic response. Republicans are also questioning theories about the origin of the coronavirus. The Biden administration is pressuring Israel and Hamas to agree to a ceasefire proposal. Biden revealed the plan last week. It had been offered by Israel behind closed doors. Hamas says it's ready to deal constructively with the plan. NPR's General Estrin says Israel's public stance is not clear.
The problem here with this deal is political. On the one hand, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, has endorsed this plan privately. That's what an Israeli official tells me. But Netanyahu cannot come out and say it outright because the far-right flank in his government is threatening to resign over this proposal because they say it would keep Hamas intact. And if the far-right does resign, Netanyahu simply won't have a government anymore, and that could spell the end of his political career.
NPR's Daniel Estrin reporting. Stocks opened mixed this morning as investors wait for news on the U.S. job market. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped more than 80 points in early trading.
The Labor Department is set to report tomorrow on job turnover during the month of April. Then on Friday, we'll get a tally of the number of jobs that employers added in May. The U.S. labor market remains historically strong. The unemployment rate has been under 4% for 27 months in a row. OPEC and its allies are trying to prop up crude oil prices by maintaining production cuts into the new year. Oil prices rose slightly after the cartel's announcement, but retail gasoline prices in the U.S. continue to slide, down 6 cents a gallon for regular in the last week. Stock in Boston Beer Company has lost some foam after a would-be Japanese suitor denied it's in talks to buy the brewery. The maker of Sam Adams beer saw its shares soar last week when news of the potential sale first broke. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News. Texas Democratic Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee says she has pancreatic cancer. She says she is getting treatment and will be occasionally absent from Congress. Among several issues, Jackson Lee has worked to fight hate crimes, backed sentencing reform, and sponsored a bill making Juneteenth a federal holiday. Congresswoman Jackson Lee has been in the House since 1995. Puerto Rico's governor has lost his bid for a second term in office leading the U.S. territory. NPR's Adrian Florido reports Pedro Pierluisi lost in the primary election to a rival party member.
Governor Pedro Pierluisi was defeated by Jennifer González Colón. She is Puerto Rico's non-voting representative to the U.S. Congress. Both represent the political party that supports U.S. statehood for the island's territory. 4 years ago, they were elected as allies on the same ticket, but last September, González announced her plan to challenge the governor. In his bid for re-election, the governor touted increased tourism and progress on post-Hurricane Maria reconstruction. González appealed to voters' frustrations with corruption, power outages, and a crumbling health system. Her win over the governor came as an upset. He had the support from their party's establishment. González will face candidates from several old guard as well as upstart parties in the general election in November. Adrian Florido, NPR News.
NASA and aircraft maker Boeing say they've set a new launch date for their Starliner space capsule. It's going to be on Wednesday morning. Last Saturday, a Starliner launch was scrubbed with just a few minutes to go. Mission managers cited a computer issue. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their travel card, Venture. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation at rwjf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Using the Catskill Delaware watershed as a living classroom, the Catskill Water Discovery Center educates people about the nature of and threats to our planet's most vital resource, pure water. The Catskills Water Discovery Center is presenting a program on the challenges and solutions for groundwater in the Catskills this Friday. Joining us now is Carla Weinpaul, a member of the Water Discovery Board, and she's also Global Manager of Environmental Health and Safety for Google. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here. For folks who may not know about the work of the Catskill Water Discovery Center, could you give folks a little bit more about how you use the Catskill Delaware watershed as a classroom to educate people?
Sure. So we have a wonderful exhibit at the Discovery Center, which goes over the evolution of the water supply system for the Catskills. It's open to the public. You can come in and take a look, and it talks about the construction and development of the watershed and the reservoir system for New York City. We also have a number of different events that occur at the center, and in the future, we'll also be opening up a nature preserve, which will connect people with the water resources in the community. And we're also putting on this event about groundwater. So groundwater is often overlooked. Like, we're very, very focused on surface water in the Catskills and in the watershed, but a lot of our residents and businesses really rely on groundwater as their source of drinking water. So we wanted to take the opportunity to bring in a panel of experts to talk about groundwater challenges within the Catskill watershed region and to talk about solutions and just to have sort of an open discussion with the community.
Yeah, I think that most people are aware that this area, the watershed, provides New York City with its drinking water, but I don't think people are aware of the scope and range of the groundwater in the area. Your conference on Friday is talking about those challenges. Can you talk about some of the challenges that municipalities in the Catskills, residents, other users of the groundwater encounter?
Absolutely. So there's sort of a collection of different challenges, and they're based on different inputs into the environment. When folks put in a well, right, they may find challenges with regard to groundwater quality in that well. And that can be from a myriad of different issues. Groundwater, if I step back for a moment, like groundwater around the globe is a very important resource for drinking water and for irrigation and for farm use and for manufacturing, for other uses. And there are a lot of stresses around the quantity and also the quality of groundwater. Within the Catskills, due to our abundant rain that we've had recently, the amount of groundwater that we have is fairly bountiful. But, you know, there are groundwater stressors around quantity that occur when people drill wells, around yield and recovery for groundwater, depending upon the depth of their wells and what the rock formation is. So we're going to have on the panel, Titan Drilling will be there, hopefully, and they'll be able to talk about maybe, groundwater yield. In addition to that, for groundwater quality, there are sort of a variety of impacts. One could be industrial impacts. Historically, there was some industrial operations mostly focused along the railroad right-of-way throughout the Catskills, and some of the industrial operations resulted in some historical groundwater contamination. We'll talk a little bit about that during the seminar, sort of what the history of industrialization was around that area and what those impacts were for different chemicals. Then you have the geology itself. So our groundwater is mostly through bedrock. If you were in Long Island, you know, it would be mostly glacial till. You know, it depends where your what your geology is in your area, what your groundwater resource is, and how it's filtered through the environment. So as you come through the rock formation, the groundwater chemistry can change. So we're going to have a professor of geology, Scott McGuffin, from SUNY Oneonta, talk about how geology can impact groundwater and some of the typical things that you find from geological impacts. You get, you know, sulfides and sulfates. Those are the things that cause kind of your smelly water, which actually isn't necessarily a health impact. It's more that our the odor threshold for sulfides is a lot lower than the health impact number. So you smell it well before it's an issue. So it's more of a nuisance issue. Like, nobody really wants to, you know, shower with or drink smelly water. So there's a number of different ways that you can treat that. And there's also other minerals that you can pick up. And in addition, you can pick up sort of E. coli and different bacteria throughout the formation. So we'll be talking about those contaminants as well. And then within your house, you can, depending upon your house's age and the construction of your pipes, you know, some additional metals that you can get are iron, copper, and lead. Or additional ones. Iron you also can get from the geological formation as well. So we'll talk about kind of, you know, how geology plays a role in groundwater quality, how industrialization plays a role in groundwater quality. And then we'll also have a representative from the DOH to talk about private wells, concerns and some options for treatment. There's also a great new program. I'm actually not sure how new it is. It's called the DSSP2. It's a joint program between the DOH and the DEC, and they have set up groundwater protection programs. We'll be talking about that. Margaretville, Hawkinsville, and Arkville, I believe, just really recently entered that program, so they'll be able to talk about that. And that's really helping the municipal water supply companies, which rely on groundwater and wells to provide water to municipalities. They're going to talk about their program. And then finally, we'll have somebody from the DEP who's going to talk about how surface water protections also protect groundwater. So it's sort of, I know I went off topic.
Yeah, that's right.
A little more probably than you asked.
No, that's good.
But
is there a particular...
It's a great topic.
Yeah, no, it's a big topic. And I'm wondering, is there a particular catalyst for this topic to be to be addressed now about these challenges? Are there any things that are sort of popping up that are you know, causing folks to pay more attention to groundwater in the Catskills at this time?
I think it's really that people are, it's a bit of a quandary. Like, you know, we provide amazing water to New York City as drinking water. And when people put their wells in unit, they'll have, sometimes they have very variable groundwater quality, and it's a bit frustrating, right? We're providing this great surface water, but meanwhile, groundwater quality can be variable depending upon where your well is drilled, you know, how deep it is. You know, there's a bunch of different variables that come into play regarding groundwater in the Catskills and people's experience with that. There's also, you know, there's municipal systems that are in each town. They do testing on a routine basis. They have treatment systems. You know, there's a whole infrastructure that I'm not sure people, we want to sort of raise people's awareness around all these different things that are going on to provide drinking water to the community, but also for a forum for people to ask questions around, like, why am I getting E. coli in my well that I just drilled? You know, why am I seeing these chemicals? You know, what's going on, and what are some of the things I can do, and what's causing it?
You mentioned that there would be someone from the New York City Department of Environmental Protection there as well, and some of the measures put in place for the surface water might benefit the groundwater. Is that something that is happening or has happened?
A major benefit, I would say, to groundwater quality in the Catskills is the septic system upgrades. So essentially, anything that we put into our septic systems has the potential to leach into groundwater. So things go into the septic system, you've got leach fields, things go out. And if you're, you know, through that transport mechanism, there's the potential for chemicals to go into the environment. A big chemical of concern, which I'm not sure if we're going to have the ability to talk about this a lot, but is PFAS. Called a forever chemical. And as people use materials, I'll have some slides around like what, where those materials are found and what products you have. It's very surprising the pervasiveness of PFAS in different types of products. Like, for example, I believe Glide Floss has PFAS in it, right? There's, you know, takeout containers that are glossy on the inside that are cardboard have PFAS on them. It's very, you know, you, if you're wearing Gore-Tex or water repellent clothing, it's in there, and that ends up getting in, can get into the environment through septic systems. So septic system upgrades are improving to the extent that they're now filtering out some of the chemicals, and that you're not having this sort of direct discharge of wastewater into the environment. That is definitely improvement. I would also say like that our protections in the area around, you know, where you can put road salt, some other things. But I think the major focus for the DEP during the discussion will probably be around septic system upgrades.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Carla Weinpaul, member of the Catskill Water Discovery Center Board, about their upcoming seminar or conference, Catskill Water Discovery Center's program on challenges and solutions for groundwater in the Catskills, which is Friday. Do you think that the people in the municipalities, upstate New York, DEC, DEP, do you think that folks have generally done a pretty good job about mapping these areas so that it can promote proper development and management?
I think it's quite difficult to map the areas because it's based on sort of the geological formation, and you can have variability between two wells placed fairly close together and the groundwater quality within that well. So I think it's a difficult thing to map the groundwater quality throughout the region.
Mm-hmm. All right. And let's remind folks about the seminar coming up on Friday. Where can they get more information?
They can get more information at the CWDC website. That'll have a link to the event. The event is also posted on Eventbrite. So if you go to Eventbrite and just, you know, type in groundwater in the Catskill, the only one that's going on, you know, you can find it there. The event is occurring between 10 and 3. Lunch will be served with Mary's Cooking again. There's a $10 registration fee. Mary's is awesome. You know, her potato chips are great. And there's a $10 registration fee, which will cover lunch. Registration is between 9 and 10, and then the event starts at 10. We'll have speakers in the morning, lunch, and then we'll have a panel discussion afterwards.
And you guys are putting this on with a couple of other partners as well. Do you want to mention them?
Oh, sure. The Rotary Club is sponsoring the event, so kudos out to them. And then we're very, very pleased to have our attendees from Professor Tsuni Oniata, DOH, DEC, and DEP. CWC will be hosting the event at their auditorium at the CWC Center in Oakville. So the address there is 669 Highway 38. It's right next to the rec center. Right. If you're coming to us, you should put the address in your GPS before you get to us, because you'll lose cell services.
All right, Carla Weinpaul from the Catskill Water Discovery Center. There's more information about their work and the conference on Friday at waterdiscoverycenter.org. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
We'll take a break and we'll have more when we come back. This is Radio Chatskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
Thursdays at 9, it's Connect the Dots with me, David Christian. It's the freeform show where each song leads to the next by way of a musical connection. Think of it as a dive into music's liner notes, exploring the behind-the-scenes connections that show that the distance between genres and decades is often shorter than we think. That's Connect the Dots, Thursday nights at 9, here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Tanya Mosley.
And I'm Juana Summers. We've got your back when it comes to reporting the news. And one of the things this station counts on to keep it all going, contributions.
Including that vehicle you no longer need. Donate it. Help us bring you the news you count on. Learn more by visiting this station's website. And thanks.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruto, and it's Monday. So we check in with James B. Huntington, local economist, for some local economic perspective on Workshift Live. Good morning, James B.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. All right, well, let's jump into some first quarter results with economic growth in the U.S. What can you tell us?
Yes, well, economic growth slowed down a little bit, more than we would have thought. In the first quarter, it grew at a 1.3% annual rate. That's adjusted for inflation, but that doesn't matter too much. That's down from 3.4% in the last quarter of last year and did not make it to the 1.6% estimate. It may be due to large extent to results coming in from COVID still, and things, prices coming down in some places. And so generally overall, I'm seeing that the economy has slowed, but it's fundamentally sound, and it's pushed up by some consumer spending, which is high, but not as high as it was before.
Now, this is more complete data than was initially released right after the quarter ended. So, how is it playing out with the economists? Are people concerned, or how are people feeling about it?
Not really concerned. There's not much people worrying about it. It also came in at the same time that inflation went up at 3.3% for the first 3 months. That's a little bit lower than it was before. So there's not much concern here. I mean, some of these numbers are affected by many different factors, which don't seem like they're going to last. But the economy is still growing. Mm-hmm.
So is inflation up or down? Is it up, way down, or not?
Well, certainly not way down.
Yeah.
We're seeing some concern, some misinformation about inflation going up. It has gone down substantially over the last year. It was about 5% a year ago, and as recently as January of 2023, it was around 6 or 7%, and now it seems to be coming in around 3%, depending on the measure it was, or depending on the measure you choose here. So a lot of people don't seem to believe that it's down, but the problem, as before, is that prices certainly have not gone down, and the ones that were pushed up are staying there for the most part. Although we do have some things like Walmart and Target making promotions out of lowering some prices, their demand has gone down a little bit. There is a lot of concern going on here. So they're finding it appropriate to reduce some prices. But that's not a big deal as far as inflation in general. It's just it is higher than it was for a long time, and that's made people be more concerned, even if it may seem that, so to speak, it doesn't justify that. Mm-hmm.
What are consumers saying about rent and inflation?
Yes, well, there was a survey at the end of last year that the results came out now from the Federal Reserve, and what they're saying is that rent Well, people who are having trouble paying rent went up from 17% to 19%. The definition of that is people being behind on their rent at some point over the past year. So that has got a little bit worse. And we have some really split numbers here. We have 72% saying that they're doing okay or living comfortably, which is quite similar to the 73% the year before. But then you have a stunning 96% of people making less than $25,000 saying that their situations had been made worse. So it may be that at the very bottom of the economic scale there, these people haven't had enough help and they're running out of opportunities. In general, people with lower paid jobs, there have been more lower paid jobs, more shortages of that sort of thing. But obviously, there are a lot of people who are not catching on, even with the jobs that are available right now. So overall, the survey says, the commentary on the survey says that even though inflation is cooling, it remains a major concern for many Americans. Mm-hmm. It might be a big enough worry to take the shine away from an economy that is growing quickly and adding jobs, which it is doing. It is adding jobs. It's not growing as quickly now with the results that came in more recently, but there are still a lot of jobs out there.
Well, and inflation seems to be the thing that we try to blame everything on. Are there some bad things that we can not blame on inflation that are happening?
Well, in general, rents are not really increasing because of inflation. We're getting some people saying that when prices go down, that that's somehow a symptom of inflation, which is not true at all. And people are saying that wages and pay in general has not kept up inflation with inflation, whereas the statistics show it really has. It's actually exceeded that. So those things may seem to some people like they were caused by inflation, and they're not.
And let's get into the numbers here. Where are we when it comes to stock, oil, precious metal, and crypto prices? How do they change?
Okay. Over the past 2 weeks, the changes here. Gold was $23.25 very early this morning. That's down $115 an ounce. Silver, $30.21, down $1.68. The ratio is 77-1. We may have reached a local peak on those. Those two went up awfully fast for a while about 2 weeks ago. So they're still strong by the standards of the past 6 months or a year or so, but they weakened recently. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 38,686, down 1,300. And that was with a 575-point gaining Friday. That may have been because of a few specific stocks that had terrible weeks. That may be shown by NASDAQ, which went up 49 points to 16,735. So oil, the West Texas Intermediate, 77.10, down $3.81. And I'm hearing reports from people around the country that it is showing up at the pump. So it should be a little bit less for you there. Bitcoin, 69,287, up 2,400 and some, still in the 60s, but next week will tell whether it can break out or not. British pound, 1.2714, up 0.2 cents. The euro, 1.0841, down 0.28 cents. Those are just really randomly moving around depending on some details of interest rates, and they are higher in this country. But it doesn't explain why one went up and the other went down. Japanese 100 yen coin, still 64 cents, still down, not doing anything good. So overall, it may be better. We're actually maybe doing better than it seems. And for some reason, I'm optimistic about the next week or two.
Okay.
So it may well rebound.
All right. Well, always keeping an eye out on the ups and downs of the economy for us. And we appreciate it. James B. Huntington, live with us every Monday for Work Shift Live Local Economic Perspective. James B., we'll see you next Monday. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
Working.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with some local pride activities, Catskills Pride, celebrating with two big events this month. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
It's a trip to the jungle this week on the Retro Cocktail Hour when we hear tunes by Shelly Mann for the TV show Doctari and something new by the Swedish exotica band Ixtawela. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. June is Pride Month, and Catskill's Pride is dedicated to building a fair and just community where everyone has the opportunity to lead a safe and better life. In celebration of Pride Month, they're hosting an awards gala at the Eldred Preserve to recognize individuals in Sullivan County who exemplify their mission statement, and other events planned as well. Joining us with more is the president of Catskills Pride, Gary Ott. Good morning, Gary.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming in. I want to get to your events that are coming up. But first, I wanted to ask you about kind of where we see the state of Pride these days. I was kind of concerned to hear a couple days ago that FBI and Homeland Security have warned of possible threats during Pride Month celebrations.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Tim. You know, I did what I always do when I have a question. I did a Google search, okay, and I said state of gay rights in America, and here's what I found. First, a brief history. June is Pride Month, began on the first anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, with marches in Chicago, New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. In 1999, President Bill Clinton proclaimed June as Gay and Lesbian Month. However, in recent years, Republican-controlled states have been adopting policies that target LGBTQ plus people, especially transgender, the most vulnerable among us. 25 states have actually banned laws, banning gender affirming care for transgender minors. Other states have laws or policies keeping transgender girls and women out of bathrooms and sports competitions that align with their birth gender. GOP state attorneys general have challenged a federal regulation set to take effect this August that would ban the bathroom bans at schools. There have also been efforts to ban or regulate drag performances. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's
What is Pride without drag performances? We'll get to that in a minute, okay? Since Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022, progress such as the 2015 Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide could be lost. In fact, things are so dire that Kevin Jennings, CEO of Lambda Legal, notes enormous anxiety in our gay community over whether we're about to have a massive rollback of what we gained in the 55 years since Stonewall.
Yeah.
Now before everybody loses their mind and goes crazy, we do have some bright things to talk about, okay? Here on a more local level in New York State, we should be very proud that New York State is one of 21 states, including the District of Columbia, that have laws in place protecting people's employment because they're gay. Imagine that. That leaves a majority of states where you can't be hired or you can be fired because of your sexual orientation. On January 25th, 2019, New York State human rights laws were amended to explicitly include gender identity or expression as a protected class in all areas of jurisdiction, including employment, places of public accommodation, public and private housing, educational institutions, and credit. We should be very happy and proud of where we live now.
And another thing to be happy about in Sullivan County.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for asking. Closer to home, Sullivan County legislators voted to proclaim June as Gay Pride Month. The rainbow flag will be flown at the Sullivan County Government Center for the month of June. As you so aptly said, Catskills Pride is dedicated to building a fair and just community where everyone has the opportunity to lead a safe and better life. Now let's talk about some fun things here, shall we?
Yeah. Okay. Also, I would say Ulster County is declared it Pride Month as well. I believe in Delaware as well. But you guys have your awards ceremony coming up. You're honoring people in the area that exemplify your mission statement. Tell us about this awards ceremony and more information about the people.
Okay, so we're putting the awards ceremony together. It is coming up. It is coming up very quickly. I can't believe we started planning this a while back, like almost a year ago, and it's like actually happening. I'm like totally freaking out. But you know what? I must say, let me take a plug. I have the best board of directors that I'm working with, and it has been a group effort, and we are pulling this together, and it's going to be a fabulous event at the Elger Preserve on June 15th. The people that we've decided to honor include Mike Levine of Calicoon Center, Claire Marin, owner of Catskills Provision and Distillery, Aaron West and David Johnston, who run the Barryville Farmers Market, Laura Burrell, Highland Town Councilwoman, and finally Barbie Newman, who works at the town of Walkill Boys and Girls Club. A limited number of tickets are still available through Catskills Pride website. Wait, there's more. Okay. In addition, we're hosting a free drag story hour at Hurleyville Performing Arts Center Saturday morning, June 15th. Mrs. Kasha Davis will be reading. This and other Pride events will be held starting Friday night, June 14th through Saturday, through Sunday, the 16th. We're turning Sullivan County gay that weekend. For further information about all of these events and to get tickets or RSVPs, people should go to dragmetothecatskills.com. And as I said, for a limited time only, there are still tickets available to the Gala Awards at the Elger Preserve. Those can be had at our website, CatskillsPride.com.
CatskillsPride.com. Yeah, that's the Drag Me to the Catskills is a whole weekend of Pride events, which is put on by the Visitors Association, and you guys are involved. What does it mean to have this visibility, given all the things you kind of ticked off at the beginning about this kind of backlash and other parts
If I may tell you a quick anecdote, okay? Yeah. I was at a local establishment, name shall not be mentioned, with a friend of mine. We were having lunch. There was a gentleman sitting at the bar, one of which was a former Sullivan County legislator. And he looked at his friend over a beer and he said, "I don't understand why gay people need a whole month to celebrate. Why don't us people have a whole month to celebrate?" And I got up and I was very measured. I was actually very proud of myself. And I looked and I said, "Sir, I heard what you said. I didn't mean to eavesdrop." I said, "But it's because of people like you and the statement that you just made that people like me need a month to celebrate. We should be proud about who we are, and this is what it's all about." Mm-hmm. We have worked long and hard. And you know what? The fight's not over, Tim, because, the things that I said, there are legislators on a federal level that are snap your finger. And they're ready to take these things away from us that we've come to, you know, cherish and depend upon and drastically change the way we lead our lives.
Yeah. Gary Ott's the president of Catskills Pride, celebrating Pride Month. Their awards gala is coming up. There's more information at CatskillsPride.com. And again, more information about the weekend of Pride in the Catskills. Drag me to the Catskills.com.
Thank you so much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Gary. Now, today is World Bicycle Day. It is recognizing the bike as the environmentally fit and sustainable means of transport. As an avid cycler herself, contributor Tracy Gates took a ride down to her local bike shop in Jeffersonville to talk to the owner of Catskill Cycle Works, John Thorndike.
You opened right during the pandemic, I believe. What gave you the idea to open a bike shop in the first place?
I guess the simple answer is that I always wondered why there were no bike shops. My wife and I were talking about it one day, kind of casually, and said we should just open a shop. And then so we, you know, we did. And that was it. It was a strange time, pandemic, and, you know, things were just sort of uncertain, and I was kind of in between work, and that was that just sort of started the whole thing.
So you opened up what was the year again?
It was the fall of 2020.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I do. I remember actually I was over at 52 and Vine, and I think I saw the lights on and I was very excited. And I think it came in and we were all wearing masks. So yeah, it was early days still.
Oh yeah. Those were the early days, the mask days, which I don't care to remember, but yeah, it was an odd time for sure.
Well, we're sitting in your shop right now. It's kind of the end of the day. And can you describe a little bit about what you're doing repairs, but you're also selling bikes? What would be the percentage of repair to selling, would you say?
Oh, I'd say I mostly do repairs in here. I probably 95% service in here. And then, you know, I sell some bikes. I don't know what you would consider a lot of bikes, but I sell a fair amount. I'm always happy to sell a bike, but I'm pretty much chained to the work stand most of the day.
Do you have a typical day? Today is a weekday, but like say a Saturday and Sunday, what is your day like usually on the weekend?
You know, every day is unpredictable. I don't know. I can have Wednesdays are often my busiest days because I'm closed Monday, Tuesday, but Saturday can be really busy or it can be completely dead. Same for Sunday and any day, really. Just when I think I know what the day is going to go like, and then it's the exact opposite. So I don't really have a typical day in here.
It's definitely the time of year when people are dusting off their bikes, if they haven't already. What would you advise people check on their bikes before they go for that first ride or even daily? What should they be checking?
I always check my tire pressure. I set it every time I go out, just before I go out. And I usually do a really quick run through of all the fasteners on the bike. And which sounds like it might be a lot, but there's really not that many. I make sure everything's tight on the handlebar and stem controls, axles are tight or whatever you have, quick release or through axles, and pretty much anything with a fastener. I go through and check it. I also clean the bike, which I usually do after the previous ride, but still. Bike gets a quick wipe down, and also chain lube, of course, and that's in my case anyway, always done minimally that like the night before. Mm-hmm.
What should people know about tire pressure if they don't know anything?
That's kind of a tough question, and there are so many different tires and so many different people and different conditions and road surfaces and all kinds of factors that will, you know, dictate what tire pressure you're going to set. I always tell people to look at the pressure range on the side of the tire. At minimum, you can at least follow that and stay somewhere in between there and start in the middle and find your preference. And then at least it might not be exactly right for you, but if you're riding your bike once every 2 weeks, I think it's going to be okay.
So basically always checking the tire pressure on the bike before you head out on the road, right?
Yeah, that's right. I again, it depends on the tires. Some tires and tubes don't lose too much air when they sit. Other tires, like tubeless tires, for example, can lose several PSI overnight. So if you set it the day before or 2 days before, it could be 6, 8 PSI too low, and that's no good.
I usually check my brakes. So what should people look for when they're, or feel for when they're before checking their brakes before they go up for a ride? Because we all know this area is very hilly and you want to be careful that you have those brakes.
There's definitely, you know, a pre-ride prep for a regularly ridden bike. And then there's what would I check on a bike that's been sitting? Is that more of your question?
Yeah, I'd say the bike that's, especially this time of year, that's been sitting in your basement or in your garage, and what you want to really look at, especially for safety.
This depends on how long the bike's been sitting and what kind of condition it was in before it sat and where it sat. And there's a lot of factors. You know, I'd say corrosion is the biggest issue that I'd be concerned with. Cables, specifically brake cables, of course, if we're concerned about safety. The inner cables inside that, the brake housing, are they corroded or are they still in good condition? Same with the shift cables, the chain, anything that pivots and moves, and that's... That's my compressor on the kick.
Okay, maybe we'll take a quick break while the compressor goes up. Okay, great. I guess it's pretty clear. It's just like you really want to do a visual check of these things. And if anything is looking a little iffy, is that the time that you come in here or you go to your local mechanic and say, hey, can you give this a look and tell me if I need to tune up now or not?
Yeah, I guess if you're uncertain about anything, then you should bring it to a shop. If you are around here, yes, please bring it to me. That's the simple answer, you know. And again, it depends where you're going to ride and what bike we're talking about. So, if you're not sure, then bring it to someone who knows.
Well, you also mentioned lubricating that chain. If your chain isn't working well, you're not really going to be going anywhere. So taking care of that chain seems really important. What would you advise people do as far as cleaning and lubricating their chain, if that's something that they feel comfortable doing?
The biggest thing with the chain is to keep it clean. And the chain and the whole drivetrain, really, most important thing is to clean it regularly. Clean is fast, and dirty drivetrains are slow. That's the most important thing. And then, of course, you need to lube your clean chain. And that's a whole other conversation and thing that, you know, probably don't want to get into. That could be people do podcasts and shows that are hours long about lubing your chain and all kinds of geeky stuff like that. Just keep it clean and keep it freshly lubricated.
What are some really kind of basic tools that someone, that a bike rider should have or could have?
I think if anyone wants to invest in tools, they should invest in cleaning tools. That's probably the most important thing. And then, of course, a basic tool set with whatever you need to make sure things are tight on your bike. Every bike's a little bit different, but there are tools that can cover almost everything you need on the bike, and that's all you really need to maintain the bike. I always recommend a dry lube, and I have one that I sell here that I have sold many of, and I use on all the bikes I service. I use them on my own personal bikes, and that's my recommendation.
So what are the most common repairs that you find yourself doing here? What are people bringing in?
Oh, probably flat tires, you know, tube replacement and gear adjustment, I think are the most common. It's almost always something else, you know, the gears aren't quite working properly because it's something else, but ultimately that's what I think brings most people here, because you go to ride your bike, and if the tire's flat, you don't ride it. But if the tires are not flat, you ride it, and then you realize it's not shifting properly, it's loud, so you stop riding it, and you bring it to the shop.
So this area is pretty hilly, as we know, and also a variety of kinds of road conditions. What type of bikes would you recommend for biking in this area?
To me, the road bike is the greatest bike to have here, followed closely by the gravel bike, which is essentially a road bike with larger tires on it. There's endless great roads and gravel roads, and you know that's what I see when I look at the area, is all these great roads. So any bike that suits you or fits you and you're able to ride comfortably on your favorite road.
Let's talk about bike safety just for a second. What's a good idea to have on your bike or to wear when you're riding around here, particularly because these are country roads? So what do you really need to do to make sure that you're safe when you're biking, really anywhere, not just here?
I think you need to be seen, and lights help with that. A tail light is, to me, the most important thing, and it gets people's attention. If people are paying attention, they see your lights, and at least you're visible on the road. But brighter colors help. They don't solve every problem, but I think really just to be seen is the most important thing. And then from there, you can ride a certain way that is both defensive and safe, and also courteous to the drivers, because when you're not, they are not happy with you, and you know, you kind of have to share the road as if you were in a car, and just kind of be respectful, I guess, is the most, that's not the most important thing, because the light's the most important thing, isn't it? Being respectful to the drivers is, I think, you know, waving to people. I try to wave to people all the time, like, thanks for moving over, or just, hey, how you doing? I'm out, you're out, and that kind of thing. And so that attitude, I think, is contagious and hopefully just helps keep you safe.
I like that answer a lot. I also always wave to people because I just think that if people aren't accustomed to a rider on the road, and yeah, it's good to keep good relations between riders and drivers, I think. Well, I'm looking around your shop a little bit, and I know that you have some things that are probably good for safety. What are some things that you sell here that would be, you spoke about those lights on a bike, which are so important even during the daytime.
I do carry lights here. I always have tail lights in stock. Like I said, my number one recommendation, I use one all the time. I don't ride at night, so I use one during the day. Depending on what time of day it is and where I'm going, you know, sort of dictates how obnoxious the light is going to be, you know, flashing or solid beam, whatever. Other safety items? Well, yeah.
I'm pointing at my head.
Right, of course, the helmet. I didn't even think that was a question. I do not go on the bike without a helmet. So yes, of course. I forgot about the helmet. Yeah. Yes, I sell helmets. And I, of course, recommend to everyone who comes in, either they buy a bike here or just service, I always just try to remember to say, hey, wear your helmet. It sounds like a stupid thing, but, some people don't. So.
Oh, I know a few actually, and I'm related to a few, but yeah, do not go out riding without your helmet. Is there anything that you wish your customers knew just about a bike shop in general? I know that's kind of a tough question, but I think sometimes when one is a small business owner or whatever one does, you know, there are things that you know that customers don't, and maybe you wish they did know. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, no, I don't have any thoughts about that. I truly am happy anytime anyone wants to set foot in here. You're always thankful for understanding whenever a customer says, oh, you must be busy, whenever you can get to it, or, you know, if they're willing to work with you in some reasonable way. That's all I ask of anyone, and hopefully that's all they can ask of me. Because that's all I try to do, is just be reasonable and fair and do the best I can.
Is it just you who's really doing everything here at the shop?
Yes is the answer. Here at the shop, I'm the one doing everything. I'm the only one here. My wife, Kelly, is also a completely integral part of the business, helped to start it, or she started it for me. I don't even know. I mean, I'm deaf and blind without her. So, she does most of the responsible things for the business. You know, we all know what those are, but as far as who's wrenching in here and throwing tools around and doing all that stuff, then that's me.
It definitely helps when we have support in the background. Not everyone knows it's there, but it's great that you have that with your wife. And do you get out on your bike much? Do you have any favorite places to ride, or do you not have time at this time of year?
I do get out. I like to complain about not being able to get out, but I do get out. I have to pick the times that are good to go out, and I don't ride as much as I used to ride. I think having this shop is one of the main reasons for that, but I have some favorite roads, some favorite places to ride. You may have seen me on them. I'm going to keep those a secret.
I'm kind of with you on that, but you know what? Everyone, I think that's the great thing about bike riding is that everyone discovers their favorite places, and sometimes we share those with our friends. So any kind of last thoughts?
Last thoughts, I guess I'd go back to bicycle hygiene, which is, I think, the most important thing. If you get your bike back from the shop and it's running great and you're happy with it, keep it clean, keep it maintained, and you won't have to go back to the shop very often. And you will have a clean, comfortable, safe, and fast bicycle. And if you're not sure, then bring it to the shop. If you're not comfortable with a repair, or just want someone else to look at it and say, oh, that's okay to ride. I do have a few customers who do that every year. They bring their bikes in and say, you let me know if it's safe to ride this year. And I do. And there's also, people who just don't want to do the work themselves, which I completely understand. And, then they just say, I don't want to do it, you know, and they bring it to me. So I do it. And that's it.
John, thanks so much for taking your time with me today. And I wish everyone, especially you, a great bike season.
Thank you, Tracy. I hope to have a great season, and I hope everyone else does too, and has safe rides and good rides. And I will see you in Jeffersonville or out on the road.
Contributor Tracy Gates speaking to John Thorndike of CycleWorks in Jeffersonville for World Bicycle Day, which is today. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. Reminder, you can hear this program and all of our local programming on our website, wjffradio.org. While you're there, click on the One Small Step Powered by StoryCorps icon. It's on the right-hand side in red. It's an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us, and we've partnered with StoryCorps to invite you to take part in One Small Step. You can fill out the online application to be matched, and we'll record conversations with matching participants throughout 2024. Just go to our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Can two people with different political beliefs still have a meaningful conversation? I'm Ronald Kelson, and I'm working with Radio Catskill on StoryCorps' One Small Step, bringing strangers and our community together, one conversation at a time. We are having conversations in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania all year long, and you should be a part of it. Sign up now at wjffradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Radio Catskill, keeping you connected with the local edition. Weeknights at 6, right after All Things Considered. The local edition, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Partly sunny today with a high near 80, cloudy tonight, low 56, and tomorrow a high of 80 and a stray afternoon thundershower possible, and thunderstorms in the area late Wednesday night through Thursday afternoon are predicted by the National Weather Service. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.